Hey, welcome back to the FDIC podcast, where we talk about our banks, our banking system, and how that system works for those who actually use our banks. I'm Brian Sullivan at the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation. And today we take a look at various options to reform deposit insurance. Now, most folks who would listen to a podcast like this would already know that the FDIC's base deposit insurance coverage is limited to at least $250,000 per depositor per financial institution, and even more under certain circumstances. Now, recall that when Silicon Valley and Signature Banks failed in March of this year, the federal government took the extraordinary step to protect all depositors, both those who are insured and the uninsured. This decision was made because it was determined that the failure to protect uninsured depositors would have serious adverse effects on financial stability. So the federal government invoked the so-called systemic risk exception to avoid or to mitigate those risks. Well, following these bank failures, FDIC Chairman Martin Gruenberg directed the agency to conduct an analysis of the current deposit insurance framework and to place these recent bank failures in the context of the history, the evolution, and indeed the purpose of deposit insurance since the creation of the FDIC, now 90 years ago. Well, less than 2 months later, the FDIC released that report, and today we're joined by two senior FDIC economists who were instrumental in producing it. Rosalind Bennett and Jonathan Pogash are part of the FDIC's Center for Financial Research. And Roz and John, welcome.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us.
Rosalind, let's begin with you. Tell us about this report.
So in response to the events of March 2023, where we had two very large regional bank failures and one that followed quickly thereafter, the chairman asked us to evaluate deposit insurance coverage levels and options for possibly changing those levels and putting those into historical context.
Right. The FDIC is, after all, 90 years old. It's been doing deposit insurance for a long time. But what kind of changes are we talking about here?
So any changes that we make to deposit insurance coverage levels would be changes made legislatively, so by Congress. But we did look at different types of deposit insurance coverage levels and types of accounts that might be covered.
So, John, a report exploring options for reforming deposit insurance. Does the deposit insurance system need reforming?
So I think if you think back to March 2023 and the very rapid runs and the volume of the runs on Silicon Valley Bank and Signature Bank, which were at the time the second and third largest bank failures in American history, certainly suggests that there's reasons to want to reform the system. In addition, the systemic risk exception, which was invoked at the time, protected all of the uninsured depositors at those institutions, which raises fundamental questions about the role of deposit insurance in the U.S. banking system. So at a minimum, it's worth thinking about, is this working as intended, and are there ways to make it better?
John, is it just these two banks that are prompting us to have this conversation, or is it more systemic?
So that's something we talk about quite a bit in the report. And if you look at the system overall, there's a lot more uninsured deposits relative to the total amount of domestic deposits than we've had in a long time. At its peak in 2021, uninsured deposits as a proportion of domestic deposits were higher than at any time since 1949. So there is something different in the system today. Even though most deposit insurance accounts are fully insured, over 99% are below the deposit insurance limit, that last 1% are very, very large accounts. And that suggests that maybe there's reason for reform, especially when considered and combined with the technological changes that make these bank runs so quick.
Right. Well, Roz, let's get into this report. It lays out three options for reform. What are they?
So the first option we talk about is limited coverage. And limited coverage is very much like the system we have now, where we have a deposit insurance limit on all accounts.
$250,000.
That's correct. But we do leave open an option of changing that limit, perhaps increasing it. The second option we talk about is unlimited coverage, and that would be where all deposits are covered to an unlimited amount. The third option we talk about is what we call targeted coverage. And that coverage would offer a different insurance limit to particular accounts. And we focus on business payment accounts. Those accounts are the types of accounts where business would be paying their payroll, doing operational, any type of operational business, so paying vendors and payroll particularly.
Right, right. And to be clear, any of these options would require congressional approval.
That's correct.
Okay. So, John, what are the pros and cons? The report lays out the cost and the benefits of each of these options. What are they?
So three of the main pros and cons that we think about when talking about each of the options. One is financial stability. One of the reasons deposit insurance was created is to promote the stability of the banking system. We also think about moral hazard. And what moral hazard is when someone is insured from the risks that they're taking, it provides incentives to take on greater risks. So banks might take on greater risks if they're beneficiaries of deposit insurance. Banks that have sound risk management practices are going to think about the potential for withdrawal and manage their risk accordingly, and deposit insurance blunts that. In addition, we think about how much is this going to cost the bank, right? We have to charge banks for deposit insurance that we provide, and that's another important consideration. And when we think about each of those three options, limited coverage, unlimited coverage, and targeted coverage, in the report, we evaluate it along those dimensions.
Well, Roz, how do each of these options sort of stack up to the costs and the benefits that John just mentioned?
Limited coverage is very similar to the system we have now. Just increasing a small amount in the deposit insurance coverage limit would not get to the very large accounts that John was referring to earlier. And therefore, it would not provide us a large financial stability benefit.
Mm-hmm.
Unlimited coverage is quite a different system than we have now and would open the door for lots of moral hazard risk and also would cost a lot more for the banks because we'd be providing coverage to all the accounts,
right?
Unlimited coverage. Targeted coverage provides higher or unlimited coverage to business payment accounts, which are those that businesses use to pay payroll or pay their vendors. And we feel like those spillover effects from those accounts provide a lot of financial stability benefits.
So the report concludes that all in all, when you factor all these costs and all these benefits, it's the targeted coverage that may have the most merit.
That's correct.
Well, do you see any limitations to the targeted coverage option?
I think the largest challenge that we have in terms of the target coverage option is defining which accounts would categorize.
What characteristics these accounts have.
Right. As we mentioned earlier, we are really trying to find the accounts that businesses are using to pay their employees, to pay their vendors. Those accounts tend to be accounts that do not pay a lot of interest or don't pay interest at all. So those are types of ways that we could get to it. But I think that is the largest challenge.
Right. Now, John, has the FDIC ever done anything like this before?
So listeners might remember that in 2008, during the financial crisis, there was the Transaction Account Guarantee Program, and that covered non-interest-bearing accounts at banks that didn't choose to opt out. And that remained in place until 2010 when it was made mandatory and participation of all banks was required under the Dodd-Frank Act. And that was in place through the end of 2012. That is no longer in place, but it does provide some precedent for how this might work.
Mm-hmm. Well, the report also talks about other regulatory and supervision type tools that could support deposit insurance reform, John, right?
Yeah, so it's important to remember that deposit insurance does not exist in a vacuum, and its efficacy is really going to depend on the other kinds of tools that exist in the system as well as the banking system overall and how it's structured. So in the report, we talk about a number of changes, some of which are within the regulatory authority of the agencies, some of which might require legislative changes. Those include the traditional regulatory and supervisory tools that people are familiar with. It also includes deposit insurance pricing, which means as the FDIC, we can charge more for deposit insurance to banks that take on greater risk. For example, high levels of uninsured deposits, if that's perceived as being more risky, we can charge banks more for that. It is a tool that can be used, but we can't perfectly price for risk.
Right.
We also talk about two other tools, collateralization of large uninsured deposits, for example, which would require that banks hold high-quality short-term assets against very large deposits. And this would impose some kinds of cost on the banks and on these very large depositors for maintaining these very large accounts that pose the risk of bank runs. And we also talk about limited withdrawal capacity. So for very large depositors, requiring that they cannot withdraw everything at a moment's notice, and we require to have some of that account remain in the bank, and that would increase their incentives to monitor the bank and increase their incentive the risk-bearing capacity that those account holders have.
Well, that's a lot. And all this to say is that this is food for thought, right? Any of the ideas that are embodied in this report are being put out there for discussion purposes. Roz, now what?
Well, we continue to have discussions. People approach us and ask us to talk about the report, and we continue to talk to people about the report.
But there's a lot of people talking out there about deposit insurance and how it might be reformed in order to fit today's market. John, any final thoughts about this report and where we go from here?
It's been a great experience to think through these issues, and I'm hoping that we can inform the conversation that policymakers nationally are having about these issues.
Well, Rosalind Bennett and Jonathan Pogash of the FDIC's Center for Financial Research, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.